Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest today is BYU legend. He is former BYU quarterback and BYU TV broadcaster now. He is Gary Scheide. Gary, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, it's a great day, Shep. I miss you being in the dugout on those baseball games. You do just such an incredible job, but doing awesome. Thanks.
Well, it is always a pleasure to be able to talk with you, and I'm excited to get into all of these different topics and reminisce with you. But I want to start here because obviously this is the 100th year of BYU football, and so there's a lot of celebrations going on around this football program. And in part of that celebration was the 1974 Fiesta Bowl team was honored. What better way to celebrate that occasion than by talking to one of the founding members of the Lavelle Edwards quarterback factory? What was that like to get together as teammates and reminisce about really the start of what BYU football is known for today?
Well, it was just incredible. I can't think of a better word to describe it. We were talking back and forth, emailing, and it even got to the point where guys were starting to talk about, you know, what hip replacement did you have, or what shoulder replacement, what knee replacement. And the guys were saying, we may need to get a tester to make sure that you're telling the truth on those things, you know, go through it before you enter the room there. But here I am sitting in there, and I'm talking to, you know, Brian Billick, who was my tight end, my other tight end, Bill Allen, and then Tom Toulson comes up and he says, I'm always open. You know, every receiver came up to me. I said they were always open. And it was just, I'm sitting next to Patty Edwards and the coaches at the table there. J.D. Helm came back, our running back coach, and Coach Dave Cragthorpe, who was 90, 92 or 93 years old. He was back there. And then we had Dwayne Painter, the offensive coordinator, and there was over 50 players that came back from all over the country to celebrate. And it was a great banquet. We went golfing Friday morning, and that was a great time. And then we had that dinner, and the Fiesta Bowl representatives were there, and they were talking about, you know, you guys, how'd you feel coming to the Fiesta Bowl? And you know, so they're going to show different, you know, clips about that through the whole year. So it was just, and then we get to go on the field before the ball game. So everything about it was just very special.
Anytime that somebody or a team does something for the first time, you're certainly aware of the situation. But even with that being said, were you guys aware of what you were actually accomplishing at that time, being the first team to ever go to a bowl and representing BYU?
Well, it was interesting, Shep, because, you know, our first three games, we lost our first three games and tied our first four games. So 4 games into the season, you know, we weren't thinking, a conference championship. We were thinking of just winning a game. And then as we won a game, then it kind of snowballed. Well, we want to win the next one. And then we want to win the next one, and we don't want to lose again. And then it got to the point where, you know, we're playing the really good teams, and we knew we had a chance to beat every one of them if we played up to our capabilities. As the season progressed, we were one of the worst 30 teams in the country after the start, and we ended up being in the top 15. So it was, but week by week, we were accomplishing things and just coming together as a team.
You know, we're going to get into much more about certainly that team and your journey and really the foundation that you guys were laying for this program that's still being felt today. But in the intro, I mentioned that not only are you a former BYU quarterback, but people can still see and hear you on the BYU broadcast of many different sports. Tell people why that was something that was appealing for you to be able to do, and when you really got into doing that, the broadcasting side of things.
Well, as I after I graduated from BYU and went on, had a chance in the National Football League with the Bengals drafting me, and had some opportunities there, but my arm just didn't hold up. And then I got into a business where we designed and built floating marinas around the world. We built marinas. We built 30 marinas in Japan. We built 15 in the Middle East, and I was able to travel and get to, you know, see a lot of different countries and meet with a lot of really cool people. And it was just fun for me to watch something where there was just a piece of land and it became a very beautiful development. So that kind of, you know, was something I really, really enjoyed. But I'd always wanted to teach and I'd always wanted to coach. And my favorite coaches in junior high school were my PE teachers. And I said, one of these days I'm going to be a PE teacher at a junior high school, just like Mr. Baggett and Mr. Parsons. And then my good friends, Gary Gadagno, we would always announce as we're playing baseball games, we broadcast the games. Oh, that ball's hit a long way. And we, you know, so we do that. We want to do that someday, you know, and broadcast. And so it's just everything that I've ever wanted to do, I've just said, I'm going to give it a shot. And if I get the opportunity, I'm going
to
do it.
I do want to go back to something that you said, because you talked about when you were growing up. Tell everybody where you grew up and what your family situation was when you were younger.
Yeah, I grew up in a city called Antioch, California, which is in Northern California. It is about maybe 40, 45 minutes south and a little east of San Francisco, and about 50 miles south and west of Sacramento. So it's in that area. There's two rivers that came into there, Sacramento and the San Joaquin River. And as a kid, we were walking down to the rivers every weekend and fishing. So just loved to fish. But at our high school, we only had a population of maybe 30,000 in all of Antioch. So we had one high school. And it was just kind of exciting to think of someday that as you walked on that field that you'd get to play there. So it was just that feeling that, you know, you really looked forward to it. And I played baseball, basketball, and football all through the youth. And so I never had any time off. And my favorite sport was baseball. But my favorite game to play on Friday nights was football. And then I loved basketball. So I was able to, you know, do a lot of things from my high school there. I'm in the High School Hall of Fame there at Antioch High School. I averaged over 20 points a game in basketball. I led the league in scoring. I was the first guy to ever score 1,000 points. And then we went into baseball and we won the division. And my sophomore coach, Babe Atkinson, was a scout for the Baltimore Orioles. And he taught me just a lot of different things and offered me a contract one time and said, don't sign it, go to junior college and play baseball. So I had a lot of football offers. I had basketball offers, I had baseball offers, but I wanted to play professional baseball. That was my goal. And so the quickest way for me to get to there was to go to another year in junior college and try to play baseball. So ends up about 10 days before the football season starts, I didn't even go out for football. I wasn't going to play football. And the whole team came over to my house. They had two quarterbacks on the team. They both got hurt in practice. They came over to my house and said, Gary, we want you to be our quarterback, you know, and there's 60, 70 guys coming into my house with the coaches and asking me to be the quarterback. And I'm telling you, not, I don't really want to play football anymore. And I said, because all we did was just run the ball in high school. And he says, we will throw the ball. He says, I guarantee we'll throw the ball. I said, will we throw it more than 25 times? He says, yes, we will. I says, do I need to get hit in practice? Because I don't need to get hit in practice. He's giving me a red shirt or something. You know, I just want to get ready for the games. You'll wear a red shirt. You'll never be hit. I said, I don't want to run long distances. You know, I said, I'll run sprints because that's what I do in the game. And he says, you'll never run a long distance. You'll run sprints. So I was kind of dictating what I wanted to do there. With
yeah, you had all the power, Gary.
I had all the power and I had 60 guys in the room with me there. So now I go out and I play football. Just about a week and a half later, we have our first game. And I have a really good game and we win. We're 3-4-0 and we're the number one team, JC, in the country. And I'm leading the nation in passing. Well, in the fourth or fifth game, I break a bone in my wrist called a navicular bone. And it's a bone that takes 6 months to heal. So I had it in a cast. I could not play baseball that year. So I, as a back door, I was going to say, I'm going to play football because I know I can get a football scholarship wherever I wanted to go. And then just see how baseball worked out. So I went out for football the next year. And as luck would have it, about the fourth game again, I broke another bone in my wrist. And this was a radius bone. And so I was done for the season. We were ranked, you know, number one again. And I was doing well. Well, the first guy to come to my door, called me on the phone, was Lavelle Edwards. Now, Lavelle had tried to recruit me out of high school. He's one of the many that did. And my meeting with Lavelle lasted less than a minute out of high school, because I told him, I said, "Coach, I said, I appreciate you, you know, coming to talk to me and recruit me." I said, "But I'll be honest with you, I've never heard of your school." So, I said, "And I've got a lot of other offers that I'm considering." So that was our conversation. Well, after this injuries, and Lavelle calls up and says, "I'd like to come to your parents' house and meet you and bring Coach Whitbeck with me." He says, "Is that okay?" And I asked my mom. She says, "Sure, that's fine." So Coach Edwards and Pete Whitbeck, they come to my house. My mom makes some dinner. And we have just a wonderful conversation. And it just, you know how Coach Edwards is. I mean, he's just a charmer. And Pete Whitbeck was, you know, all positive with BYU. They really talked a great game there. And afterwards, when they left, my mom told me, she said, "Gary," she says, "I really like Coach Edwards." She says, "I think you need to go visit that school." So when your mom tells you you need to go do something, then, you know, then you do what your mom tells you to do. So I said, okay. So I went, I flew out to BYU to visit. It was incredible. It was so different than my upbringing there in Northern California. First thing we did is, normally when you go on a recruiting trip, is they set you up with girls, you go to a party, and it's just, you know, kind of a, that kind of thing. Well, I get there to BYU, and they set you up with some girls to date, and we go over to a house, and we're sitting around there with other athletes that are being recruited. And then someone says, "Okay, who's got the opening song? And who's got the opening prayer? And who's got the lesson?" We had a family home evening. And I'd never heard of a family home evening. And it was just awesome. I mean, I just loved it. I couldn't believe people were this nice. And then I went and I got to see a game. And I saw BYU was playing Wyoming, I think it was, and because I had my cast on. And I thought, man, I said, I think I could really excel at this level right here, you know, because I thought the junior college I was playing at looked better than what I just saw in a game. And I thought I could really excel. Man, I looked at the mountains, how beautiful they were, and all the girls, how pretty they were, and how nice everybody was on campus, and the fishing. I mean, and everything just kind of fell together. And I went home, and I told my mom, I said, "I love it." I says, "I love everything about BYU." So then I called my friend, one of my friends that worked in a restaurant. I said, "John," I says, "why don't you come to BYU with me?" And he says, "Where is it?" And I says, "It's out in Utah." I said, "It's a religious school. I'm not sure what religion it is, but everybody's nice." He says, "I can never get in there, you know." I said, "Why? What do you got to lose? Why don't you, let's send Coach your transcript." And he calls me the next day and he says, "Okay, let's send him the transcript." So we sent Coach Edwards a transcript. As soon as he received it, the next day, he says, "You're in." So now John and I, here we are in the middle of October. We go out on the block program and we're into BYU and we're starting. I'm living up in Desert Towers and it's just the start of our journey there at BYU.
Well, look, and the thing about BYU, not only did you not know anything about it, it was certainly not BYU that we know as of today, and certainly not the team that it would become in just a couple of years. They were not a passing. It's very similar to what you were dealing with already, where you're like, "Hey, I don't want to run the ball." Well, that's what BYU was doing. They were a running team on offense, so it had nothing to do with what we associate BYU with now. That was a major leap of faith by you to go to BYU, wasn't it?
Well, absolutely, Shep. And, you know, who was it the year before me led the nation in the Pete Van Valkenburg, led the nation in running. And Coach Edwards tells me, "Well, we are not going to run the ball. We can't be really successful over time. We're going to throw the ball." I said, "Coach, I want to believe you." I said, "But you just had the leading rusher in the nation." He says, "Gary," he says, "we're going to throw the football." He says, "I promise you that. And you're the one we're looking at that can start this whole thing off." And so that was his pitch to me. You know, we had a leading runner in the nation, but we're going to throw the ball. And in high school, I threw the ball maybe 10 times a game, and I probably hit 7 or 8 of them. And, you know, I mean, a really high percentage because we ran the ball so much. It didn't guard our receivers very well. So that's what Lavelle told me, is we're going to throw the ball.
You had mentioned that when you were, you know, you're talking to your friend, getting him to come to BYU with you, you're like, there, it's a religious school, but I don't know what religion it is. Was religion something that was part of your upbringing? Did you grow up in a very religious home? Even though obviously we're not talking about a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints at the time, was religion a part of your upbringing?
Yeah, it was, and we were Lutherans, and we went to church every Sunday, and my mom and dad were just really good Christian people, and had good Christian friends, and we end up going to Minnesota every year, and I've got a cabin back there, and I've been going there for the last 60 years, and when we go back there, almost all of Minnesota seems to be Lutheran. So when we go back there now into the cabin, we go to a branch. And we live in a city that we drive about an hour to go to a branch. And it's a smaller branch. About a couple of years ago when COVID hit, we had the branch president. He called me up. He says, Gary, he says, would you mind not coming to church today? He says, we can only take about 20 people here. And with all the people we got, we can't get your 33 in here. And so would you mind not coming and just kind of staying at home, and you can have, you know, your sacrament meeting in your cabin and stuff. And so we got uninvited to church out there in Minnesota. But yeah, back to your question, we were very, respectful, worship our Heavenly Father in a little different way than our LDS does now, but it was very, very religious background.
So what was your conversion story to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
Okay, so I go to BYU, and I'm not a member, and John and I, on the first Sunday that we get there in the dorms, we go knocking on the door, and the door's locked for breakfast. So, you know, we're kind of opening, kind of pushing the door, and it says open at 8 o'clock, you know, and that sort of thing. And then somebody walks by, and I said, well, how come this isn't open? They said, it's Fast Sunday. And I says, what is Fast Sunday? They said, well, that means you don't eat for 24 hours, so they don't open up the dorms here to eat and stuff. Well, it was that kind of occurrence, you know, that we learned every time. And he said, well, you're having a steak conference. I thought, okay, well, are we going to get steak dinner or what? You know, those kind of terms, all the terms you're talking about were totally new to me. So they put us in a religious class. They put us in with the other athletes that were not LDS. And we had Brother Ledbetter taught it and his Book of Mormon. And it was, you know, it was just very interesting to learn, you know, how these people, why do they keep getting all these miracles and they keep forgetting about it and they keep fighting each other? I mean, it was just a great story. So I was interested there, but I was, you know, I had other direction that I was going, but the people on the team, the teammates, the coaches, our equipment man Floyd, you know, he told me one time, he says, Gary, you, one of these days you're gonna be a member of this church. And I said, Floyd, I don't think so. You know, I appreciate it and I really like you, but I don't think you're right on that one. So anyway, I just learned from the players. If I'd ask a question, they'd answer. And so I went through my junior year and nothing changed. So then I get there, you know, after that, at the end of my junior year, I was friends with a girl, and she took me up to Salt Lake, and we went through Temple Square, and she says, you know, why don't you just sign up to see the missionaries? And I said, I don't know about that, you know. I'm just going to take my time on that. And they said, she says, oh, I think you really need to sign up to see the missionaries. And I said, well, what are the odds if I signed up for the missionary that they would find me in Antioch, California by the time the summer was over with? So kind of just to kind of make her happy a little bit, I said, okay, I'll sign up. So I put my name on the card there, and then went home the next couple of days to California. We got out of school around the middle of April, and then we would stay, you know, April, May, June, and July, and come out in August for football. So I get back there, and the next day, I'm back there at home. The next day, I get a knock on the door, and there's two elders. And I said, how did you guys find out so quickly? I said, I just...
Gary, you know this. We waste no time.
I know that, but you know what their answer was? They said, what letter? What card? So they just happened to be in that area had knowing nothing about that I'd signed up to see him. So I invited him in, and we had a lot of conversations. And over time, they were in my home many times that summer. And I was a hard guy to convince, but I really liked what they said. And the message was tremendous. And by the end of the summer, I'd invited my brother to come in there with me. I said, you need to hear this, I know, because so he listens. And then at the end of that summer, we both joined the church. And he comes out, and he's my roommate out there at BYU. So it's just, you know, just wonderful influence. And it's one of those things that you ever think it was meant to be, for all the things that could have happened. In my case, absolutely.
What a great story. That's fantastic. We'll have more with Gary Scheide coming up in just a second. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. We'll have more with Gary as we continue on with the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Hey, Cougar fans, Jason Shepherd here to talk about one of our other great BYU Radio podcasts, Big Stories. It's a show about amazing stories from Big 12 schools and beyond. Host Cleon Wall traveled to places like Tempe, Lawrence, Orlando, and other cities to find real-life tales from BYU's opponents, like Baylor grad Jimmy Durrell, who moved back to an impoverished Waco neighborhood to help those who couldn't help themselves. Cleon has plenty of stories just like that through the football and basketball seasons. Don't miss out. Find Big Stories on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. So happy to have Gary Scheide with me today. And before we go any further, because we're going to get into a little bit more football talk here, there was a quote that one of our producers found from an old Deseret News article. And the quote was, quote, "And besides, what other quarterback had the ability and good sense to start each two-a-day practice pounding out a broad repertoire of rock and roll classics on the big Smithfield House pipe organ? That was Gary Scheide." That's how somebody described you. Can you would play like rock and roll hymns on the pipe organ on campus?
Oh, it was great. We had a piano right outside the locker room. So I'd get ready and I'd just get on the piano and I'd just play songs and the guys would come out and they'd sing it. Well, in the old field house there, that's where the weight room was, and they had an organ sitting up there, and so I would open the case of the organ, and then I would just start playing. It would be blasting out over the whole Smith Field House. Usually, though, by the time I was playing for 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes or so, I got kicked out. So, but I will go back the next couple days later, and the guys say, "Hey, Gary, go play that organ. We want to hear some more songs." So, yeah, so I'd get back in there and play some more piano and some more organ.
All right, so let's go through this hypothetical here then, Gary. So let's say that you stroll into sacrament meeting coming up on Sunday, and the normal organist is sick. And they're like, who can play the organ? If they asked you to go up and play the organ, could you still do it?
Well, the thing about it is I never took piano lessons. So I played by ear. So if they, you know, had the notes up there, I'd have a hard time reading it. But I used to play the saxophone. So playing the saxophone in junior high school and stuff and elementary school. So I knew how to read music, but I never had any piano lessons. It's all playing by ear. So now I do one funny thing that happened, though, is we're playing in Fiesta Bowl. And in the Fiesta Bowl, all the teams get together and they have little competitions. You know, they might go bowling together. We're going against Oklahoma State and doing all this. Well, now the day before the football game, they had a banquet. And Oklahoma State gets up there and they sing with the band. They sing, "I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee." And they do a good job, you know, and everybody's cheering and that sort of thing. Well, next thing I hear is someone goes up there and they talk to the band up there. And the band says, "Well, we understand from BYU that they would like to have at least equal representation here at this banquet. So we've asked Gary Scheide to come up and play a song." Well, I didn't expect to play. So I didn't know I was going to go up there and play a song. Now I have to go up in front of the whole banquet with 1,000 people there and play a song. So I get up there and I said, I'm only as good as the rest of my teammates. I said, I'd like to ask my fullback and my running back, John Beetham and Tim Mahoney, come up here and help me out. They were really had really good voices. So we get up there and I play Color My World by Chicago and those guys sing it. So we responded to their proud to be an Okie from Muskogee. So it wasn't I want to do. Now when we're at that get together 50 years later, someone yells in the back, "Gary, get up and play a solo." I'll say, "Okay, I'll play so low that you can't even hear me."
There you go. So I want to go back then. You obviously mentioned the Fiesta Bowl. And I want to go back to something that you said earlier, because your first season that you played was 73. You talked about the year before Pete Van Valkenburg led the nation in rushing. So you come in here and you're new and the offense is going through a transformation. And we obviously know how it ultimately plays out. But you had talked about, you know, there being some struggles early on trying to get everything going, and maybe you didn't start the seasons the way you wanted to. Obviously, the 74 season ends the way that you want, but how much of those early struggles do you think really set you guys up for what ultimately would happen in 74?
Well, that's a good question, Chet, because one thing we really had that I think is one of the best of all the teams that ever played at BYU, we had a great defense. So the defense was always keeping us in the game. And from an offensive standpoint, we just kind of struggled. We lost Jay Miller, our best receiver, who had 100 receptions his sophomore year, the second most all-time in the history of college football. And you lose a guy like that, and you know, those are hard shoes to fill. So we had our captains get together after we, you know, tied that fourth game. Our captains got together, and really we had some great conversations. You know, here's what we need to do. Forget about yourself, you know, play as a team. The question was, what can you do to help us win these games? What can you do? So no matter what position you played, whether you're starting or not starting, what could you do to help us win? And we just kind of, you know, talked it through like that, and we became as one. You know, we just totally rededicated our efforts to, you know, it's not about me, it's about us. And it just turned us around. We figured out a way to win. Our defense kept us in the game. And once our offense got rolling, it was all over.
Isn't it funny how certainly there's always schematic changes and there's adjustments that are made that way. But sports, and look, and you know this better than anybody, sports is such a mind game. And if you can get your mind in the right place and the mental part of the game is where it needs to be, it's amazing how it unlocks everything else, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's you know, it's as much mental as it is physical. And that's why you see some of these teams, you'll have great leadership. You'll have, whether it's the NFL or college, you'll have a couple guys that are great leaders. And you'd do anything for them. And that's what we had there on that team at BYU in 1974. We had some great leadership.
Were the accolades, you know, you end up winning the Sammy Baugh Trophy, which is given to the nation's top passer. You know, you were receiving some Heisman votes. How much of that stuff was it a big deal to you at the time?
Oh, yeah, it was. You know, I'll tell you what was the big deal that I was most disappointed in. I was leading the nation in passing the entire year until the Utah game. So now Utah's just wasn't very good. You know, we had crushed them as a junior team, and we knew we were going to beat them. So, but they came in and they tried to defend the pass. They only would rush one or two guys and try to defend the pass. So we had to run the ball, you know, a lot of times. Well, because of that, we didn't get to throw as many passes as we normally do. Long story short, I was leading this quarterback from the University of California named Steve Barkowski. He was second, and Cal played Stanford. And he had a great game. He completed 30 out of 40 or something like that. And I only hit like 15 out of 20 or something like that. So long story short, because Utah was so bad, they cost me the national championship in leading the nation in passing because they couldn't compete enough to keep us keep it good.
Doesn't it always come down to BYU versus Utah, blue versus red? Isn't it funny how it always comes down to these two teams?
Absolutely, and everyone's got a story for it, and that's my story. They because of them, they weren't good enough. They cost me the leadership and passing.
Hey, look, I like the fact that you're putting it on them. I like that. I enjoy that part of it. Do you have a favorite game? Maybe you feel like it's your best game, a favorite memory from your time. Do you have those? I'm sure you get asked questions like that all the time.
Yeah, you know, I've got a number of them. You know, I mean, I can go back. You know how it is with sports. You remember a lot of things about the game, and you could tell what play it was. And 50 years later, we're meeting and we're talking about different things that we did. And we remember the plays. We remember the name of the plays and how it worked. Well, for me, one of the really great things I think that turned us around in 74, we played the University of Arizona at Arizona. Arizona was ranked in the top 15 in the country, and they were a very good team. And at Arizona, they were really tough. Well, the night before, Kyle Whittingham's dad, Fred Whittingham, I love the guy. He was the best coach that I ever knew, and he was so motivating. He gets up, and in his gruff voice, he says, "You guys are better than these guys." He says, "You don't give up. You don't give them an inch. When they knock down, you don't help them up. You just run them over. And you guys are better than these guys, and you'll show it, and you'll win tomorrow by you know, just coming together as a team and taking that attitude." So by the time he was done talking, I was ready to go play ball. And I didn't want to go to sleep. I was ready to go. So we come out the next day, and that kind of, that message carried over. And we came out, and we were just killing them. I think I threw 5 touchdown passes, and we smoked them. And after that game, I was voted as a national player of the week for the entire country, and got an $1,000 scholarship for BYU. And then President Oaks was the president of BYU, and he sent me a letter of thanks saying, you know, thank you for doing that and allowing this scholarship to be given to someone here at BYU. So, you know, that you get more than just leading the, you know, winning a national title. You get a message from the president of your school saying thank you. So it's more than that at BYU.
What was your time like when you realized that your time at BYU was coming to an end, but there was an opportunity for you to continue to play in the NFL? You mentioned you ultimately get drafted by the Bengals. What was that time like for you? Take me through that process for you.
Oh, it was great. You know, back then, what you did is you waited by the phone. They didn't have the TV going through the draft and that sort of thing. So you just kind of waited by the phone. And then I got a phone call, and it was from Bill Walsh. And he says, "Gary," he says, "I want to let you know." He says, we thought we could get you in the 3rd round because of your injury. And Bill would come out and throw in the ball with me. And we went through film. And he would ask me, "Why did you do this?" And I'd explain, you know, when the safety came up, that showed me it was, you know, cover 3. And so I knew the flat was open. And this. And so we went through all those conversations. And then he says, "We'd like to welcome you to the Cincinnati Bengals." And, you know, it's crazy. I mean, you don't know where you're going to go. All of a sudden you go into Cincinnati. So I go back there within a couple days, and I get there trying to find the stadium there at Cincinnati. And there's a bunch of one-way streets around there. And I remember when we played Cincinnati in baseball, BYU did, and I told the story. I said, I couldn't get to the stadium. I says, I could go around, and I make a left, and I couldn't get on the road to go across. So I finally said, the only way I'm going to be able to get there is going the wrong way down this one block, and because there's nobody coming down there, and then make that turn. So sure enough, I go the wrong way against the one-way traffic for that one block, and I make a turn, and there's lights behind me. The policeman pulls me over and comes out of his car. He says, "Did you know that you just went the wrong way down a one-way street?" And I said, "You know," I said, "I know that." I said, "But I just couldn't figure out how to get to the stadium." He says, "What's your name?" I said, "I was just drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals." He says, "What's your name?" I said, "Gary Scheide." He says, "Oh, you're our new quarterback." He says, "Here, follow me. I'll get you down there." It's a great opportunity.
I would imagine, like, I don't know how many times you've, you know, been pulled over for speeding or anything like that, but I got to imagine you've probably gotten out of a couple of incidents by saying, "My name is Gary Scheide."
Yeah, it works sometimes.
Okay, so obviously anybody that plays sports, you want to be able to play at the highest level that you possibly can. So you finally are able to realize that dream of playing in the NFL, and you're drafted by the Bengals. But then things just don't work out because of injuries. How did you deal with that? How tough was that for you?
Yeah, it was hard. You know, it was really hard because I got out there and I got a I I rented a condominium. I was on a golf course with a bunch of the, they had a lot of horse racing back there. And I was with a lot of the jockeys and a lot of the football players on this course, you know, condos on the golf course. And Tom Schumann from Penn State was, he was drafted in the sixth round. And so they took me in the third and Tom Schumann in the sixth. So, but they weren't kind of paying much attention to Tom, you know. So they wouldn't invite Tom to the camps. And I said, you know, Tom, I got to be pretty good friends with him, you know. I says, if you want, I says, you can come and stay with me. I says, you don't have to pay me anything, but you just have to do the cooking and the cleaning. And, you know, you'd be my butler. He says, that's a deal. So Tom came with me. We were just got to be just great friends. And then as the season went on, towards just before the start of the season, then Tom got released. And it was kind of sad, you know. I missed Tom. And he wished me good luck. And then they made the final cuts, and I was on the team. But one of the safeties had been hurt. And they only had 42 on the roster. And with the 42, nobody was keeping that third quarterback there. So I was going to be the third quarterback. And Walsh comes in. He says, man, he says, I'm sorry. He says, you should, this should not happen to you. I disagree with it. But Paul Brown said that, that, you know, we had to release you because we need to bring in another safety. And so it was tough, you know, but I understood my arm. I just didn't have the velocity because I had this tendonitis. And nowadays they do this Tommy John surgery. Back yeah. then they didn't have Tommy John surgery. So I just couldn't get that better. And I just couldn't get the velocity. So had my arm been good, I had great opportunity. It was a great opportunity. And I think I could have played for a long time, but it just didn't work out.
I'm sure, obviously, you during those times, you rely on your family and you're talking to, you know, as many family members as you can to, you know, try and gain some of that, you know, that confidence and to try and get some knowledge on how to handle these situations. I also assume that it that during that time, and not just then, but throughout your life, you probably leaned on Lavelle a lot for his guidance. What was, I assume that was the case. What was that relationship like after you left BYU with Lavelle?
Oh, it was just, he just had a certain type of personality that would say, you know, when you get out here and visit, come and see me. And whenever you saw him and you went to his office, you just felt better. You know, you just felt, hey, you know, things are good again. And, you know, that's just the way Coach Edwards was. You know, he was just, he was that way with everybody, and everybody liked Coach Edwards. So, he would just help you get through tough situations.
Well, Gary, this has been an absolute treat. I love, number one, just getting to talk to you, but to be able to reminisce about these teams that really, you know, and I keep saying this, laid the foundation for what this football program was going to be in the 80s and in the 90s and continuing on to today. You know, the case can be made that this doesn't happen without Gary Scheide. So it was a blast to be able to talk to you about all these things. I hope you enjoyed it because I know I certainly did.
Oh, I love it, Shep. You know, and I just want to add, I ended up marrying the best girl that ever went to BYU. We had five children. All five of my children went on missions. All five of my children were married in the temple. And I have 21 grandchildren. And we go out to my cabin in Minnesota every year. And there's 33 of us in that cabin. And to have sacrament in the cabin and to have the gospel in the family, that's what it's all about.
You are truly one of a kind, and you are a pleasure to be around and one of the nicest human beings on this planet. Gary, thank you so much for being willing to do this. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Shep. I really enjoyed it. And let's get you back in that dugout. Can we do that? Who do we need to talk to get you back in there for baseball?
Let's see what we can do. Let's see what we can do.
All right, thank you, Shep. A pleasure to be with you.
Thank you so much. Thanks once again to my guest, Gary Scheide. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.